Welcome to Missing Persons Uncovered. I'm Caroline Humer, a child protection expert, and in this podcast series, we seek to understand the complexities of a global issue. Every year, hundreds of thousands of people go missing worldwide.
I'm Karen Shalev, and I carry out research into missing persons at the University of Portsmouth in the UK. Across this series, Caroline and I are talking to professionals to share insights into how we can all be more aware and take actions to protect vulnerable people in our communities and families from going missing. Today, Caroline is talking to Achia Even from Missing Children Europe and Tatiana Popovic from Child Focus in Belgium about the growing situation of unaccompanied minors in Europe and what kind of structure has been set up and how they are working with a network across Europe to protect vulnerable children.
Welcome to this podcast, and I am joined by two amazing people from Belgium, Missing Children Europe, Anke Even, as well as Tiana Popovic from Child Focus. I am looking forward to this conversation around missing migrant children in Europe. And before we go into the details, I thought maybe the two of you could introduce yourself. So Anke, why don't you go first, and then Tiana, if you want to follow that.
Thank you for hosting us again. My name is Achia Even. I'm the Secretary General of Missing Children Europe. Missing Children Europe is an umbrella organization, a European umbrella. We have 32 members across 27 EU countries and European countries, also outside the EU. And they mainly run the 116000 network of hotlines for missing children. And I'm the CEO of that network.
Hello, my name is Tiana Popovic, and I work as a policy advisor for Child Focus. Child Focus is the Belgian Center for Missing and Sexually Exploited Children, founded in 1998. Thank you for having me here.
Fantastic. I know that both me and Karen have worked with both of you and the organizations for a very long time. We always love what you do and see what's happening in Belgium and in Europe. For today, the focus is around missing migrant children, because we know there's been a huge influx of migrants in general and refugees in Europe over the last few years. Of course, there's also an influx in other countries and other continents of migrants, and that's something we'll have to address in a different podcast. I wanted to start with this, Juanje, to talk a little bit about what's really the definition of a missing unaccompanied migrant child, or what the definition you're using in Europe.
Mm-hmm. So the definition that Missing Children Europe uses, and that we encourage our members to use to just make sure that we're talking about the same thing, is that we're talking about children who migrated from their country of origin, which in our case is a country outside the European Union, whichever reason they're fleeing their country for, whether they're fleeing conflict, persecution, or simply searching improved standards of living if it's poverty they're fleeing. So we're not making a difference in terms of the reason they're fleeing. They've migrated from their country of origin. They are considered missing when they're registered with state authorities. So when they, after arrived in Europe, have been registered at some point and then went missing from the reception or accommodation centers or the host families that were provided for them. So it's absolutely key that they must have been registered at some point. Otherwise, we don't know they're missing. So that's the definition that we use in terms of unaccompanied. I think we stepped away a little bit from the requirement that they would have arrived here unaccompanied by a parent, because we see that every child in migration is at risk of going missing, whether accompanied or not. And that has to do with a lot of the conditions that they have to migrate under. The unaccompanied is not the focus. It's very much on underage, not from the EU, and having been registered at some point by reception facilities, by authorities, and then having gone missing.
That's great. And before asking you, Tiana, what your definition is in Child Focus, if it is any different, but you just mentioned that it has to be essentially children that are not European, right? So even if there are fleeing from a European country into another European country, that would just be considered missing, but not missing migrant?
At EU level. At the level at which we work, a migrant child is considered a non-EU national, because within the EU, there's free movement of persons. So within the EU, all EU nationals have free movement of persons. So in terms of Schengen zone is open borders. So you cannot say that they're migrating, they're just moving around in the space that's available to them. That's why for us, missing migrant child is a non-EU national, or a child whose country of origin, where they were residing habitually, is a place outside of the European Union. Children, yeah, of course, sense. From Ukraine are considered part of that. They're missing migrant minors if they're going missing.
That's good to know. So from a child-focused perspective, as you're focused specifically on Belgium and and have that virtual border, do you change the definition for Belgium, or are you using the same definition?
Well, in Belgium, we have quite the same definition as Achia just mentioned. In Belgium, it is defined by the Guardianship Act from 2002. But we also consider European children since 2014 when they meet certain conditions. So it needs to be a child that does not possess any legal document, and the child that finds itself in a vulnerable situation or is victim of child trafficking. So in those situations, we will also consider these children as unaccompanied minors.
It's interesting that you say that they have no legal documentation. Am I to assume that majority of them, when they come into Europe, wherever the entry point is, majority of them do not have any legal documents? Would that be correct as a generalization?
Well, here I specifically referred to the European children that are considered as unaccompanied minors. And more specifically, as an example, let's take Roma children. They are most of the time also not registered in the country where they live, country of their origin. And so most of the times they do not have any legal documents in their possession.
We know that this has been an issue in the media. It's been described over the last few years as being a huge concern. What are the numbers? What are you seeing? I know Missing Children Europe just posted a new research early May in 2024. What are you seeing now versus, let's say, 5 years ago when it was really the height in the media?
The new numbers are out are not our numbers. They're numbers produced by Lost in Europe, which is a collective of research journalists who did their first collection of data 3 years ago. 3 years ago, their data were that in the last 3 years, 18,000 children had gone missing, 18,000 unaccompanied minors. Now, the numbers for the last 3 years are 51,000 children that have gone missing. So it's increased quite a bit. This has partly to do with the fact that more countries have reported, which is an incredibly good thing. It also has to do with better reporting. But the assumption is that indeed also the number of children migrating has increased. That's definitely one part of it. And the number of children who've disappeared has increased. So a good thing that more countries are reporting, a good thing that the reporting is done better, but it's still only a tip of the iceberg. Not all countries have those data. And it's a huge number. 51,000 in 3 years, it's huge.
It's a huge number. And when we then talk about the full scope of missing children issues in Europe, that's just a smaller chunk or a smaller number compared to the bigger picture in that sense. But it is still a big portion of the overall missing children numbers in Europe. You mentioned the structure of reporting, that it's more people are reporting, but also more children go missing. If you can explain to someone that doesn't understand the European structure of how it's been set up, how is it working?
So 16 years ago now, the European Union set aside one unified number. At the time, telephone contacts were still the most regular way of contacting helpline services. So they set up a number, 116000, which was for reporting missing children. Of course, first point of reporting is always the police, and that's also what all of our hotlines will be telling people reporting a missing child to us. But to have like one number that you can call wherever you are in the EU, and of course, that's really important when you have those unified borders, as in the Schengen zone, when you have free travel of persons, you need to have one number that you can call across the European Union. That's similar in whichever country you are. If a child goes missing, that wherever you are in the EU, you can call the same number. And so 16 years ago, the EU, thanks to the advocacy of Child Focus and all of our other members, set that number aside. And it's Missing Children Europe that has been supporting the European Union in terms of making sure that number is assigned in every country to a different entity. In some countries, that is the police. In some countries, that is the alarm services. In some countries, that's the child protection services. But in most countries, and 23 of them, it is an NGO that is a member of Missing Children Europe. And they operate 24/7 helpline services for parents and guardians and personnel working in these accommodation reception services, also supporting police officers who might need our help or need information about a different country who can call the number. Missing Children Europe actually facilitates, we've set together with our members, because we never do that on our own, who are the experts in supporting parents, family members of missing children, have set up a quality criteria to ensure that across all of these countries, the services are similar and follow certain quality criteria. So that is the system we've set up. However, what we have noticed is that in our annual data collection, so since 2014, we've collected data ourselves in terms of which children are being reported to this 116000 services, either by phone or by text or email, because of course, a lot of our members are expanding their services. And we've been collecting those data for the past 10 years now. And what we're seeing is that the percentage of children migration going missing or being reported missing is quite low, even though we know that the numbers are high. And so there's a little bit of a disconnect between the two. On the 25th of May, we always bring out our data from that data collection. And we have seen that this year, the number of children unaccompanied minors reported missing in 2023 has gone up, and the percentage has gone up, but it remains a small number. And we feel that there's a lot of underreporting to those hotlines. So they're not reported in the same way as children going missing in different ways that other children going missing. And that is absolutely concerning. So we have set up other ways to tackle the issue.
As Child Focus, you're the national hotline of the 116000 number. What are you seeing there and in regards to the unaccompanied minors? And why do you think that they're not being reported as much to the 116?
Well, it is difficult to have a good view on all children gone missing, especially unaccompanied minors, due to two reasons, and that are some are already explained by Achia, but the fact that their disappearance will not be reported by their parents because they are coming alone. And that's one of the biggest reasons. We are very dependent on the care facilities, on the police to report these children. And secondly, it's also difficult to define a missing case in the context of unaccompanied minors, because some of the children, they arrive in Belgium and they are put in a care facility and they will leave almost immediately after because they did not want to stay in the first place and they had actually another destination in mind. So for the people working in these care facilities, it's not always easy to distinguish between a child that left their care facility and the child that has gone missing. So those are the problems a bit with the reporting. Child Focus is a well-established organization in Belgium. So a lot of actors involved with unaccompanied minors, they know us and they have started to report more. So in 2023, we have seen an increase by 140%. So we had 332 missing unaccompanied cases reported to us. But when you compare that number with the number of the guardianship network, then it's only one third. So the guardianship network has registered over 800 cases of unaccompanied minors. So not all cases of unaccompanied minors will be reported to Child Focus. What we see, though, is we have worked on a manual for frontline workers. So how to prevent and how to deal with missing cases. And thanks to that manual and thanks to the sharing of the information in that manual, more of these partners have started to report to us. That is really good. But as I said before, we still only receive a small number of these missing cases. And what we also feel and see is that first of all, a lot of the partners with whom we work on a daily basis, they do not define a missing case in the same way. So for some of these people, a child that has gone on a weekend and that does not return will immediately be seen as a missing case. For others, they will wait another 24 hours before they will report it as missing. And then sometimes also the care facilities, they are made aware of the fact that a child will go to another country. And then for them, it's always also not really considered as missing because they are actually aware of the whereabouts of the child. The child will send a message after they arrived at their destination. And the guardians, they are actually saying to us the same thing when we ask them the question, how many missing cases have you seen, have you reported? Then they will always start by telling, well, missing, is it really missing? So you feel that among involved actors, mm-hmm. it's quite hard to actually define a missing case of unaccompanied minors.
I wanted to share something. What is missing and what's not missing? And how do we and how that links to data sharing and collecting data on this? So we have the definition has to be registered and then goes missing from reception centers in the sense that disappears from there without knowing where they're going. But then who knows where they're going? Is it the guardian? Somebody they trust who knows where they're going? Often people in the care facilities do know where the child is planning to go. The child doesn't want to be registered as traveling from one place to the other. Because of European rules, it's not possible for them to travel legally between one country and the other. Or if they want to do that, it takes a very long time. The procedures are difficult. And so they will try to go unnoticed. And I think that the whole idea of being on the radar is such a double thing. It's good for them to be on the radar. It's good for them to be on the system because if we don't collect data on these children, they become targets for traffickers and smugglers. Mm-hmm. They need to be registered. That, in a sense, helps protect them. But being in the system also has its disadvantages because it means you're stuck where you are. You need to wait until you're allowed to move forward. You need to go through the procedures. It takes a long time. There's a lot of distrust of authorities by these children. Sometimes grounded and sometimes ungrounded. I think in the one sense grounded because there was a really interesting research by University of Ghent that I wanted to share with you. It's called the Child Move Project. They found that I think about 84% of children who migrated throughout Europe experienced violence, also by state authorities on their travels, sometimes by traffickers, sometimes by smugglers, but also by authorities. And about 90% of these children had witnessed violence. They have reasons to be distrustful. And so sometimes they don't want to be on the radar for that particular reason. On the other hand, they also might have been encouraged not to trust authorities by traffickers or smugglers who benefit from children not trusting the authorities to make them move across borders. It's a complex myriad of reasons why they might want to be in the system or not want to be in the system. And so what is missing is really challenging because often the people working with them and the professionals working with young people will have some idea of where they were going and why they were going there. And that's why I think a number of years ago, when we noticed there was such a difference between the numbers that were being reported and the numbers that we assumed, the iceberg under the surface that we call it, we interviewed in the Summit Project a number of professionals in terms of what are the reasons for children going missing. And they know very well what the reasons are. And one of the big reasons is not wanting to be in the system because they want to move somewhere and they don't have safe and legal pathways that are trustworthy to them to do so. And that is a big reason of why they go missing.
Going back to what you were saying, Tiana, before around working with the state agencies and the registration, and you said a document to help understand what is missing and working with them, and that has helped for them to report. So how do you coordinate with the state agencies to ensure that regardless of which country the state agencies are in, that they are as consistent as the 116000 hotlines?
We have created that manual that is actually based on guidelines that were made by Missing Children Europe. So we have actually used a lot of inspiration from that. And what is really important in the manual is, first of all, to identify who are the actors involved. Because a lot of time people actually do not know what to do when a child goes missing. Who do you have to report? What are the steps? And so that was really important actually to put those first steps there and to say, okay, you as a care facility, you can report to law enforcement, you can report to Child Focus, so the 116000 hotline, or you can report to the guardian. And then when law enforcement receives your report, then that is what they will do. So they will report the child is missing on a national basis, but also on a European level, and maybe sometimes for third countries. Our UK is no longer part of the EU, and we know that a lot of children try to travel to the UK. So it's really important that law enforcement do report the child as missing in their databases, so that when the child arrives there and is in contact with the child protection services, that they might see that there is an alert for the child. And so that is really important in the sense of information sharing between state agencies. But what we have seen is that basically there are actually two parallel worlds. There is one world of official authorities that have a certain system of reporting and following up on missing cases. But as Achia said, a lot of children, they distrust authorities, so they might want to do everything to not be in contact with those official authorities. And then there is another parallel world of NGOs, of very low threshold organizations that are reaching out in the places and environments of these children, and that are also in contact with a lot of those children. But those two worlds, they do not communicate with one another for a lot of reasons, maybe sometimes also justified reasons. But what is our work, or what actually we're trying to do, is try to identify both of these worlds and these networks and try actually to facilitate information between the two networks. So for instance, Child Focus will have a missing case reported by law enforcement. When we ask law enforcement all of the assignments that they will do, we feel that they are a lot very restricted, because the child was little time in Belgium, little information on the child, and there is so much they can do. And then we will ask them, well, if it's, is it okay for you that we reach out to our organizations, NGOs that work in France, in Calais, that work in Brussels, that are more represented in the streets and that know these children? And generally, they are really okay with that. And so we contact them and we see, okay, are you in contact with this child? Is the child safe? It's not always for us necessarily to know the child is there, we locate it, and we want to absolutely return it. That's not the case. Our focus here is really, do we know that the child is safe? And that is actually the most important thing.
What we do with the hotlines, indeed, is that system. We have a regular system that we started up when we had a lot of missing unaccompanied minors from Ukraine. We started having bi-weekly meetings. In the beginning, it was weekly, but now it's bi-weekly meetings where we discuss cases of missing unaccompanied minors that are moving across Europe, where it's cases that have always also been reported missing to the police. It's not a separate system, but like reaching out to our organizations and seeing if there's any steps that could be taken by the hotlines in the countries where the child has been suspected to go. So really like a supportive action in terms of reaching out to this informal network that might have an understanding of where this child might have gone. And that is definitely something that we do on a regular basis. We share limited data. We have to be careful of GDPR. We have to be concerned with privacy. And we work together with law enforcement. But it's absolutely something that we try to do in terms of like seeing if there's any steps that we can take in the countries with these informal networks that are in touch with these children. Absolutely. And it has resulted in some children being returned eventually. Sometimes the informal network can bring information that we didn't have before for a child to be returned or located or considered safe, knowing that a child protection organization in another country is in touch with them, know where they are having an interview, are trying to reestablish contact, or trying to understand whether the child is safe. So the safety of the child is the absolute primary goal for us. And that's what we need to know. Because too often, these children come here on their own, many of them. And too often, it's considered as if, well, they made it here on their own. They made it here safely on their own. So they're considered to be quite resilient and quite resourceful, and they can travel on their own, but that doesn't mean they're safe. So we do like to know that from a child protection organization that the child is safe. So it is very important to know.
Before we talk a little bit about the misconceptions surrounding this topic, I wanted to ask, you mentioned at the beginning 51,000 missing migrant children that have been reported. How many of them have actually been found safe? Do you get that good news too?
From our hotlines, we know this because we ask them to keep that information. But from Lost in Europe, we don't know this. I don't think they keep this data. So no, that's an incredibly difficult gap to close. And it's one of the things that we're trying to work on. For example, Tiana earlier mentioned that handbook that they did based on the work that they'd done with Missing Children Europe. The work that she's referring to is called the Interact Project. And what we did in that project is across 8 countries, we organized roundtables where we did tabletop exercises with all of the authorities in a particular country, all of the authorities and organizations, so both the NGOs, those networks that Tiana was just talking about, to put them around the table around a simulation. And so it was a simulation exercise, a tabletop simulation of a case of a child that went missing, unaccompanied child that went missing, that where there was some kind of element of trafficking. The child was not safe in those hypothetical cases. And it was a really interesting awareness-raising exercise for all of the authorities involved to understand how those gaps are not being closed, how one person knows the child is missing, reports it here, but doesn't report it there, how they might yet, yes or no, record elements of trafficking. Most of the trafficking indicators were identified by someone, but in most cases, no investigation was put in place in terms of researching what the trafficking elements were. Prosecution didn't happen. And that had to do with closing those gaps in the procedure. So as Tiana just mentioned, the first, and it's great that she mentioned this first, because the whole idea was to kind of, from our side, to put it on the table, but the work was really done by the people in the countries. They had to work together on these cases and then decide, what do we need to do in our country to close those gaps? And so the first thing is to put in place a list of who are all the actors that are involved. But then the second part of that was to put in place protocols and standard operation procedures in terms of when such a thing happens, what needs to happen. A big loop in there is what happens to the children found. And that was really also an issue that came out of that exercise of Interact. When a child was turning up in a country, often they didn't ask, where have you been before? What has happened to you on the road? Which are the other countries that you've been? Children turning up were not linked back to countries that may have, so they wouldn't look for, has this child been registered by Interpol as a child that has gone missing, for example? Is there a yellow notice out? Those kinds of links weren't being made. And of course, that's a really important part of not just children going missing somewhere, but also children turning up. And then that might be a child that's missing somewhere else. And I think that that is the kind of loops that need to be made, circles that need to be closed, that came out of this exercise that was where a lot of gaps were still there. And I think one of the things that we did and that we took from that was also to work more with guardians. So we have several projects going on with the Guardianship Network, a Guard Up project, ProGuard projects, both working on strengthening guardianship systems and training guardians on what their job might be. Because what you see with other children who go missing, it's often the parents who continue to push the case through the hotlines, often law enforcement authorities, to see like, Lord, what's with my child? Because these parents are often still in touch with their child, but not through the official channels. Parents are not in Europe, they're somewhere else. It's not the parents who are pushing authorities to find the children, and guardians could play a big role in that. So that's one way in which we've tried to close that gap that's mm-hmm. still there.
But I just wanted to add something to what Achie was saying of, you know, how we could all work together and make it safer for these children, is that we believe from Child Focus that also every child that arrives in Belgium or any European country, their arrival should start with a best interest assessment.
Exactly.
And a best interest is taking into consideration all rights of the child. And it's considering these children as children in the first place and not as migrants, as they are often perceived now by the legal system. And there has been a university in Utrecht that has developed this assessment tool. And we believe that when you start with what are the circumstances, what are the needs of each individual child, that you can build a network around this child, and that this network around this child will protect this child in the country, but also if the child decides to leave eventually for another country, they will have enhanced their resilience or will have mm-hmm. created more resilience, whilst now yeah. these children coming here and they leave, and we just feel in Belgium that we have left these children more vulnerable than when they first arrived. So that is not okay. We should make them stronger.
And Tiana, I know we've talked a lot about different aspects, but I think there's also, fortunately, there's still misconceptions around the missing migrant issue. What are the main misconceptions that you encounter when handling the missing children cases for migrants?
There are several misconceptions, and one of the misconceptions is, as Achje has mentioned, that these children are assumed to be very resilient. They manage to get here on their own. So if they disappear, it is not that alarming because they have their resources, they know that where they are going. And another misconception in this area is that actually the strategies that these children deploy to survive or to manage their precarious situations are often equated with a criminal identity. And that is something that is really worrisome for us because there is yet little research and view on the circumstances of these children and how they are being exploited by criminal networks, or not always clearly exploited, but they use survival strategies, and that can include stealing or drugs traffic to survive. So there is not always a network behind, but the fact is that these strategies are deployed, of course, in for their own survival, and it's not because they have to be considered as criminals. And another, I think, important misconception is what we were referring to, is misconceptions amongst the involved actors. That is difficult for the trust relationship between them. As you mentioned also before, if we really want to work on our data sharing, it is very important that all actors that are in contact with these children, that they work together and that they share information. So one misconception about law enforcement is that they are often seen as not really willing to protect these children, whilst we have good contacts with many law enforcement officers, and a lot of them, and in general, I would say, they really want to do as much as possible to protect these children, but they often feel powerless because there is little information and they feel that they can do very little. There is also a misconception about the care facilities and accommodation centers. Their law enforcement might sometimes critique them of doing too little to prevent children from running away because they are not close environments. They really try to work on the trust relationship. So it's also a kind of a misunderstanding that they're not doing enough. They're also trying to do as much as they can. But I think in general, and I think Achje agrees to that, is that there are a lot of gaps in the whole system in a whole, and we should, you know, target these systemic problems. And if we can target them in a good way, then probably all actors involved in the system will also be able to enhance our collaboration and will also feel that they can do more for these children, whilst now we are just facing a crisis on a lot of levels. And the political climate, very sadly, considering these children not as children, and that is what we should really do, is unaccompanied minors are in the first place children. We should give them the protection and the care that they need. We should welcome them as other children, and we should, in following up on their missing case, not make a very huge difference with Belgian children, for instance, running away. Although the circumstances are different, they should not be treated differently, but with the same care.
So many good points. A child is a child, doesn't matter where they're from or what circumstances. And that's what we've always said, that any child can go missing. It doesn't matter their circumstances. They're a child and we need to protect them. And that's why we have the UN Convention on the Rights of the Child and the optional protocols and other policies and legislations that are coming into place to help protect this. I do want to talk a little bit more of what should our listeners be aware of? What should they know? What can they do to help in this circumstance? What should they be doing if they see a child that clearly is unaccompanied, is in a vulnerable state?
From child focus, we would really like to encourage the public in general that when they are in contact with unaccompanied minors, is to give them, to notice them in the first place, to give them care and talk to them and engage with them and find out what their needs are and relate them to other organizations in our country that can provide assistance to these children. These children have gone through tremendous, horrible situation and trajectory to reach Belgium, to reach our country. And we can really help them by just being open and talk to them and engage with them. That will help to reestablish their trust in adults. And that's where we have to start. We have to reestablish the trust and then help them and orient them towards other organizations that can further help them in their legal and administrative or just practical and psychological trajectory.
I fully support that recommendation. I think that's what we see. We work with so many young people who've experienced this. And what you notice is that when they decide to stay in a place, it's usually because there was an adult that they felt they could trust. And that adult helped them find the services that they needed and was mindful of what their needs were and what their plans were. Every child that comes here has a dream. They come here because coming to Europe is part of making that dream come true. Every child dreams about a certain future, about having a better future than they have right now. That's usually the reason why they undertake such a perilous journey and are willing to run all of the risks that they've run on the road. And it's really important that they find an adult that they can trust and they can share those dreams with, so that this adult can find out, what can I do to help you to make those dreams come true? An adult who knows the services, who knows the system, who knows the organ, who knows the country. And I think so that's definitely what adults need to do. But I think that, you know, from our side as Missing Children Europe, what we take from that is, what do countries need to do to make sure that children find those adults in the system? That is really what's absolutely needed. Guardianship systems are so important. Children need to have good guardians. They need to be appointed quickly. The child protection services need to be services that are targeted to children, that look at what children's individual needs and plans are. So individualized care plans are incredibly important. I think in terms of empowering children while they're on the road, the best interest assessments are absolutely key. I think another thing that we've tried to develop is resources that they can trust, because for them, it's difficult to know who they can trust while on the road. And so we've developed the Manila application, which is available in 10 countries only, and we hope to expand it to more countries. But with partners like Child Focus and with countries, coordinators in 10 countries, we've developed a list of resources. It's an application that they can use, because they usually still have their phone with them to navigate through Europe, that they can use. And they know that these are the services that are targeted specifically to children. They're going to be safe there. That gives them access to services that they need in a way that is accessible to them. So something we develop with children in migration who advise us on what they need and what kind of services and information that they need. Another issue that's also incredibly important, because we do see a lot of children going missing just before they turn 18. We haven't addressed this, but I just wanted to put it there. Because when they turn 18, that's often a reason just before their 18th birthday to go missing, because they're afraid they will then be treated as an adult by the system. So long-term care plans, also looking to what happens when they age out, is absolutely key importance. And then what we've seen through the Interact project, the absolute need for countries to bring together all the actors who are involved with these children to talk more between services, but also between countries. That international cooperation is absolutely essential. Centralized contact point, anti-trafficking coordinators, for example, that talk to each other and who know where the others are in the country, so that between countries, there is that feedback loop and that feedback system. And I think a lot of the work that we do on this is also with the EU in terms of the policies. Some of the recent policies that the EU has been put in place are quite concerning. For example, recording is important. Children need to be recorded in the system, but the new Eurodac regulations lower the age, which might be a good thing, could protect children, but on the other hand, also include certain means to force children to give their data, and that there are systems being put in place that should be speeding up children being processed or people being processed at the borders. But there are also reasons for concern where we think children might be locked up at the border and be stuck there for a very long time, be excluded from education. That's, of course, not what they want, and that will encourage them to go missing. The policies around this are extremely challenging, and what I would like policymakers to do is to be very mindful of how policies that they think might help children could also have very perverse effects and push them into going missing, which is something that we're seeing with the current policies that are being implemented. We need to be very, very careful because there is a big chance and a big risk that it might actually encourage children to go missing in larger amounts. And that is very concerning and something we'll be monitoring very carefully.
I think that's the difficulty in general with policies and legislations is that they are focused on the black and white. And
yes,
the situation is very much a gray area, but we have to have some kind of structure and we have to have some kind of policies. How imperfect they ever are, they are there to help. And hopefully we can find a way to make it better or easier for children to come into Europe and be protected, especially during their vulnerable state when they're migrating at such difficult times. I know we're coming to the end. I do want to really thank you both. And I know we just touched the surface on all of this. There's so much to talk more about this issue and what things are being done in Europe, let alone across the world on missing unaccompanied minors. So I really appreciate both of your time spending this afternoon with us and having this conversation. And I'm sure we will be inviting you back to have an even more greater conversation at another time. So I really appreciate both of your time.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Missing Persons Uncovered. And thank you, Achia Ivan and Tatiana Popovic, for sharing your knowledge on the complex issue of unaccompanied minors in Europe.
If you'd like to find out more about our work and any resources we mention in the show, you can go to missingpersonsuncovered.com. And if you have any questions you would like us to answer or thoughts on topics you would like us to discuss, please contact us also through our website. If you'd like specific information or need help, please reach out to your local police department or national charity. If you are enjoying this podcast and discussion, please help support us by buying us a coffee through missingpersonsuncovered.com. I'm Caroline Humer.
And I'm Karen Shalev. Thanks for listening. Join us next time when we will talk to Willie Fush, a death investigator from South Africa, on how they view statelessness and what kind of mechanisms they have in place.